First of all, then, St. Paul wrote in 1 Timothy chapter 2, I urge that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and thanksgivings be made for all men, for kings and all who are in high positions, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life, godly and respectful in every way. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, and you're listening to Wyoming Catholic College's weekly podcast, The After Dinner Scholar. We might have expected St. Paul to tell Timothy to pray for kings and all those who are in high authority, but he goes beyond that, urging that thanksgivings for kings and all those who are in high authority be offered to God. That seems a bit peculiar, or at least unexpected, given that in AD 64, when St. Paul wrote the first epistle to Timothy, the Roman emperor was Nero, who, among other violent and perverse behavior, ruthlessly persecuted Christians. Give thanks for him? Political philosopher Dr. Pavlos Papadopoulos and I have been discussing the whole issue of gratitude, thanksgiving, as a civic virtue, that is, something incumbent upon us not only as Christians, but as citizens. With our annual national celebration of Thanksgiving coming up soon, we thought we'd continue that conversation as a podcast. In AD 64, while Nero was emperor, St. Paul wrote to Timothy and said, I urge that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and thanksgivings be made for all men, for kings, and for all who are in high positions, which would include Emperor Nero. Supplications and prayers and intercessions, well, yeah, but thanksgivings?
I wonder what St. Paul means by those in high positions. And I mean, he must include Nero and all the other rulers in Rome above him. But I wonder if the height in question is like the height of a keystone as opposed to the height of a pinnacle. And if we think about what a keystone does, it keeps everything else in place. And so if the keystone is bad or broken or crumbles, then everything else can crumble. But as long as it's there, it provides some stability. So not to paper over, and St. Paul would not paper over the terrible tyranny of Nero and his madness, his persecution of Christians and others, and his debauchery. Still, for a certain amount of time, even a very bad ruler can provide stability, and that in turn provides the conditions for many good things. Mm-hmm. From the lowest level of just comfortable self-preservation up to the possibility of actually living a good life. And so even a bad ruler, so long as he is not so bad that he starts to tear the state apart, which eventually does happen with Nero himself, and that's why he commits suicide, is because he's being challenged in his rule. Even a bad ruler for a long time can provide many goods to his citizens.
When Cicero was defending his friend, Gnaeus Plancius, from bribery charges, he talked about gratitude. And let me read a part of that defense and in three pieces and get your comments. First part, Cicero said, in truth, O judges, while I wish to be adorned with every virtue, yet there is nothing which I can esteem more highly than being and appearing grateful. For this one virtue is not only the greatest, but is also the parent of all other virtues. Is that true? And if so, how?
Yeah, I'm trying to puzzle through that and see if I agree with it. What would it mean for gratitude to be the parent of all virtues? It would mean that it in some way gives birth to and is responsible for sustaining and bringing to maturity and caring for all of the other virtues. I'm still trying to understand how gratitude would be that specifically. So I wonder, I'm teaching Aristotle's Ethics right now, and Aristotle makes a distinction between what he calls natural virtues and real virtues, virtues in the authoritative sense. A natural virtue would be like an inclination to stand up to fear and confront it, and then the authoritative virtue relevant to that would actually be full-fledged courage. I wonder if gratitude is actually what Aristotle would call a natural virtue. It's a kind of disposition that one could be more or less inclined to from birth or from one's conditions, and then that disposition or inclination in the soul, which some will find more or less difficult to act upon, could be cultivated into a genuine virtue. It seems to me like the passion or feeling of gratitude is the root of the virtue of pietas, of piety, of sort of fully developed gratitude. And that, I think, there's a good case to be made that piety could be the parent of all virtues.
Well, Cicero, in fact, went on. He says, "What is filial affection but a grateful inclination toward one's parents? Who are good citizens? Who are they who deserve well of their country, both in war and at home, but those who recollect the kindness which they have received from their country? Who are pious men? Who are men attentive to religious obligations, but those who, with proper honors and with a grateful memory, acquit themselves to the immortal gods of the gratitude which they owe them?" I mean, he's talking about piety, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so those three traditional objects of piety, parents, nation, and God, or the gods if you're a pagan, that seems right to me. That it seems like Cicero is saying that gratitude or piety directs our good actions towards certain beneficiaries of them, towards our family, towards our nation, and towards God. Although maybe that one's more complicated. I don't think God needs our good actions, though he may delight in them. But it seems like piety would help, or piety and gratitude would help direct our moral virtue and our morally virtuous actions towards their proper objects. So that if piety is a kind of debt, great debt that we can never really pay back towards the persons or things to whom we are most indebted, then that would be, piety could be the reminder, or gratitude could be the feeling that we are indebted to such a person or thing, such as our nation, and piety could be what actually orients our actions and virtues towards serving them well. Hmm.
Now, what about piety, whether it's toward parents or nations or God, when things are bad? Any wisdom there from the ancients? And I was thinking about Socrates. Hmm. You know, here's Socrates being put to death.
Yeah, good. That's a good example. I think in general, it's worth saying that piety towards family, especially parents, nation, and God, is most important when things are bad. It's precisely when things are bad that at least we can say our parents and our nation need us the most, and need our pious service the most, which would be when they need us to guide them toward justice and wisdom in the conduct of their affairs. The example of Socrates is interesting. He's put to death by Athens, probably for not very good reasons, but he says in his defense speech, the apology, he reminds the jury of the ways in which he has served Athens even under a bad regime. So he says, when the 30 tyrants were in power, this short-lived oligarchy that took power in Athens after it lost the Peloponnesian War, when they were in power, they tried to conscript all kinds of people to be complicit in their crimes of their unlawful persecution of their political enemies. And Socrates gives the example of how he did not cooperate in trying to bring a man to the tyrants so that they could harm him. He also gives the example of how he served Athens. He was pious towards Athens in a bad time by standing up to the democracy. There was a time during the democracy when the Athenian people were angry at some generals who had failed to recover some of the bodies of sailors who had died in a naval battle, and they wanted to execute the generals without trial, or they wanted to try all of them together, which was not the proper way of proceeding against any crime. And Socrates refused to use the power that he had in government, because he was serving a post in government at the time, to bring the generals to trial. And he reminds Athens of this at his own trial, saying that, essentially, I corrected you when you were acting irrationally and unjustly. And that would be an example of Socrates being pious towards Athens, the city that later condemns him to death, by pushing back against their illegal and unjust inclinations.
He was nonetheless a child of Athens, and he owed to them a duty, mm-hmm. but also a great gratitude.
Yeah, he speaks of that in the Credo, the dialogue that comes after the apology, when he's sitting in jail and his friend says that he can break him out of jail and smuggle him away and so on. He can escape the unjust sentence that has been passed down on him. And Socrates refuses for exactly that reason, saying that he has this debt to the country. There's a kind of obligation he has because it has given him so many good things in his life and upbringing. The interesting thing about that is that Athens is not responsible for making Socrates Socrates. Athens didn't try to cultivate Socrates into the philosopher that we know him to be. Nevertheless, Socrates recognizes all of the great goods that Athens did give him, even if it didn't bring him all the way to the finish line of the great life that he wound up discovering and then practicing. He couldn't have done that without a city, and he did do that with this city, and so he is indebted to the city for that.
Now, one more piece of the quote from Cicero. Cicero said, "What pleasure can there be in life if friendships be taken away? And moreover, what friendship can exist between ungrateful people?" Amazing statement. Friendship is clearly important for us as individuals. How important is it for the polis, for politics?
Yeah, I'm again stuck with Aristotle because I'm teaching his books on friendship right now. But he says that there are three kinds of friendships. Friendships that are useful, friendships that are pleasant, and then friendship in the complete or authoritative sense. Friendships among the good that wind up sustaining and cultivating and increasing the good or virtue in each person. And I wonder if there's at least the potential for political friendship to participate in all three kinds of friendship that Aristotle describes. It's clear that it's a kind of useful friendship, being friendly with, being members of the same association with, and cooperating with one's fellow citizens brings many useful things to us, above all, security. All of these benefits, security from want, and security from danger, and wealth, and everything that can come from that, all of those useful things are increased by our cooperation with our fellow citizens, but also a kind of friendship of pleasure. We delight in meeting people from the same region of the country as ourselves. We sort of initially inclined just to like them more, to be interested in them more than someone from the other side of the country. I think that applies also to if you're traveling abroad and you meet another American, you're all of a sudden interested to hear, to talk with them and commune with them. We also see a kind of friendly or pleasant friendship with our fellow citizens in the celebration of holidays, civic holidays, the 4th of July, Thanksgiving, and others. Veterans Day and Memorial Day and so on. And so we can enjoy our friendship with them by celebrating what we have in common, our nation and our citizenship. And I wonder about that highest form of friendship. It seems like at the peak, politics could actually help us grow in virtue in common with our fellow citizens, precisely through the expression of gratitude together, through what it enables in terms of the higher activities of human life, including things like education and worship, through any way in which common citizenship enables the cultivation of virtues in common with others. It would also be participating in that highest form of friendship.
Well, this year we're in the midst of confusion over the election, a very contentious election. COVID is still floating around. As Thanksgiving approaches, are there any things which you're particularly grateful for, specifically with regard to our nation and our political life?
I'm immediately grateful for many things, including my family, the community I live in, the church that I am a member of. In terms of politics specifically, as I was saying to you before we started recording, I'm grateful that I'm in Wyoming. It's a really wonderful oasis at this time. But more generally, I'm grateful for all of those benefits that come from living in America. The study of history, which I get to do a lot of here in my teaching in humanities, is really great for giving perspective on precisely how bad things can get, precisely how low politics can sink in bad times. I've been teaching about Rome this semester and in seeing the descent into tyranny that happens at the end of the Republic and in the Empire. It's really clarifying for the great goods, even if they're not perfect or highest goods, but the great goods that we still can enjoy in common in our country. Those lower goods, such as peace and security and freedom from want and ability to enjoy ourselves in many different and good ways, but also the potential for participation in the highest of human activities. There's a place in Aristotle's Ethics where he says it would be best if every city properly gave an education to its citizens. But in a regime that fails to give a good education to its citizens, families should take it upon themselves to educate their children themselves and in community with their friends. So perhaps it would be better, I think it would be better if the American public and American public education, the mainstream of our universities, were oriented towards greater goods than they are currently oriented towards. But that failing, we still have the freedom, and I'm very grateful for it, the freedom to act privately in our community, in our family, at our college, in seeking out the true good and beautiful and in attempting to practice a life of virtue.
G.K. Chesterton, in describing his pre-Christian days in the book Orthodoxy, commented, "The test of all happiness is gratitude. And I felt gratitude, though I hardly knew to whom. Children are grateful when Santa Claus puts in their stockings gifts of toys or sweets. Could I not be grateful to Santa Claus when he put in my stockings the gift of two miraculous legs? We thank people for birthday presents of cigars and slippers. Can I thank no one for the birthday present of birth?" Those of us who are Christians know just who to thank: for our miraculous legs, for the birthday present of our birth, in this era of history, in this nation, in this season, when our whole nation pauses to give grateful thanks. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.